sahana vavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahavirjan karavavahai, tejasvi navadhi tamastu ma vidvisha vahai. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Very good. Welcome back. Last week we just began our study of chapter 2 and saw just the first few verses. We'll begin today with some recitation, starting with the beginning of chapter 2. Repeat after me, please.
Sanjayuvacha, tam tata krapaya vishtam, tam tata krapaya. Ashrupurna kulekshanam. Vishidantamidam vakyam, hivchidantamidam. Uvacha Madhusudanaha. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Kutas Tva Kashmalamidam. Vishame Samupastitam. Anarya Jushtamas Svargyam. Akirtikaram Arjuna. Klaibyam Asmahkama Partha. Naitad Tvayupapadyate. Kshudram Hridayadaur Balyam. Tyaktvotishtaparam. Arjnuvacha. Katam Bhishmamaham Sankhe. Dronam Chamaru Sudana. Eshubhi Pratiyot Syami. Pujarha Varisudana.
There's a change in meter here.
Guru Nahatvahi Mahanubhavan. Shreyo Bhuktum Bhaikshamapiha Loke. Hatvartha Kamans to Guru Nihaiva. Bhunjiya Bhogan Rudira Pradigdhan. Nachaitad Vidmah Kataranno Gari. Yadvajayema Yadivano Jayeyuhu. Yaneva Hatvanajiji Vishamas. Tevastitha Pramukhe Dhartarashtraha. Karpanya Doshopahatasvabhavaha. Pritchami Tvam Dharma Sammudhacheta. Yachreyasyanishchitam Bruhitan Me. Shishyasteham Shadhimam Tvam Prapannam. Nahi Prapashyami Mamapanudyat. Yachokamuchoshanam Indriyanam. Avapya Bhumavasapatnam Riddham. Rajyam Suranam Apichadhipatyam. Sanjayo Vacha. Evam Huktva Hrishikesham.
Gurakeshena. I'm sorry. Gurake Gurakesha Parantapa Gurakesha Parantapa Nayotsyahiti Govindam Nayotsyahiti Govindam Uktva Tushnim Babhuvaha Uktva Tushnim Babhuvaha. Very good. So we have some of the most important verses of the entire Bhagavad Gita coming up in the next several verses. So we will pick up the thread where we left off in the last class. Arjuna, this question will come in very nicely here. Where we left off in the last class, Arjuna was absolutely flattened, as it were, incapacitated by his own emotions. And Sri Krishna, to get Arjuna up, Arjuna had already fallen to the seat of his chariot. So Sri Krishna's role here, I don't want to sound flippant, but his role at this point is a little bit like that of a cheerleader. He has to motivate Arjuna. He has to get Arjuna up off the seat of the chariot. And so this is Sri Krishna's cheerleading speech. Klaibhyam Masma. Basically, it means, come on, Arjuna, don't be a wimp. Get up and fight. And we had a fairly lengthy discussion about that. And we said that for this mighty Arjuna, this mighty warrior, this was the appropriate kind of language. Very harsh language, Klaibhyam Masma. Very harsh. But it was the appropriate thing to say to this mighty warrior. Now, before we proceed, this question, and if you have any questions, please do continue to put them in the question answer box up here. The question which fits in nicely here is, why is Arjuna having to go through all this emotional turmoil and not Yudhishthira? After all, whose fault is all of this? To large measure, Yudhishthira, his actions, his agreement to participate in the dice game and several other things contributed to this whole problem. We can't say it's entirely his fault, but he certainly is a major contributor to the whole terrible events that are unfolding. So Arjuna could say to Yudhishthira, hey, Yudhishthira, it was your fault. You messed up. It's not my problem. So the idea here is, then why is Arjuna so upset? Why not Yudhishthira? First of all, Yudhishthira is upset. That's just not who is the focal point of this part of the text. If we were to study other portions of the Mahabharata, we would see how terrible Yudhishthira feels as a result, as a consequence of his actions. So there's no question about Yudhishthira feeling bad. But our focus here in the Bhagavad Gita is on Sri Krishna and Arjuna in the chariot. And Arjuna, perhaps it's interesting that Arjuna doesn't blame Yudhishthira, as the questioner suggests. Arjuna doesn't blame him because Arjuna knows that it's his, you would say, bada bhai, right? His big brother. And Arjuna has so much respect for his big brother. After all, big brother is Dharmaputra, is the son of Dharmaraj and the embodiment of Dharma. And how significant it is in the Mahabharata that Yudhishthira, the epitome of a dharmic person, makes an awful mistake in agreeing to the dice game and several other things he agreed to. And this is one of the central themes of the Mahabharata, which is brought out in that scripture more than it's brought out anywhere else. And the point is this: great people are capable of making terrible mistakes. And a terrible mistake does not cancel out their greatness. They are great people, but they're also imperfect people. And being imperfect, they can make mistakes. If you allow me a brief political example, history books will probably record Bill Clinton as one of the better presidents. I didn't say best, just one of the better presidents that we've had. Was he a perfect president? Remember this Monica Lewinsky thing? Whatever. How horrible was that scandal? So what an excellent example of someone who really functioned fairly effectively as president, but still made some ridiculous, horrible blunders in his life. In the same way, every one of the main characters in the Mahabharata, all the great ones, including Bhishma and Drona, and what to speak of Yudhishthira, they are all great. They all made terrible mistakes. And what the Mahabharata shows brilliantly are the consequences of their mistakes. This is not to excuse their mistakes, not by any means, but the story unfolds the terrible consequences of their mistakes. So Arjuna, looking at his older brother Yudhishthira, for whom he has so much respect, Arjuna knows that even a great person like his brother is capable of making mistakes. Therefore, Arjuna doesn't blame his brother. Arjuna could also blame Bhishma. Arjuna could blame Drona for contributing. Arjuna blames no one because he knows that great people make mistakes. And that's one of the central messages of this scripture. Okay, so that being said, Arjuna has just received this pep talk. We said Arjuna has an emotional problem, not a spiritual problem. For that emotional problem, this is just to summarize the last part of our last class. For an emotional problem, Arjuna requires an emotional solution. The emotional solution here comes in the form of a pep talk. And I asked you at the end of the last class to consider, is this pep talk sufficient to get Arjuna up and ready to fight? Well, we only need to go on and see the next verse to find the answer to that question. Arjuna vacha, Arjuna vacha, katam bhishma maham sankhe, katam bhishma maham dronam chamarusudanam, dronam chamarusudanam, yeshubhi pratiyotsyami, yeshubhi pratiyotsyami, Pujarha Varisudanam, Pujarha. So, didn't work, right? The pep talk. So Arjuna says, katam, how? And if you skip down, katam pratiyotsyami is a verb. How can I fight against? How can I resist? How can I fight against? Prati. How can I fight against bhish aham, I? How can I fight against Bhishmam, Dronam cha? Not surprisingly, Arjuna refers to the two of his enemies that he's most fond of. Bhishma, he grew up in Bhishma's lap, his great uncle, and Drona, his beloved guru, teacher. So Arjuna says, how can I fight against Bhishma and Drona, Sankhye, in this battle, in this war, Madhusudana, O Krishna? How can I fight against my beloved Bhishma and Drona in this battle, Ishubihi, with arrows? How can I shoot arrows at them? Puja arhao, Arisudana. Arisudana, O Krishna. They are puja arhao. They are deserving of puja, of not arrows. Look at the metaphor. Arjuna is ready to offer flowers at their feet. He certainly is not ready to shoot arrows at their hearts. But this is Arjuna's dilemma. He is absolutely frozen by conflict. He continues to be frozen by conflict even after this pep talk. Something we're going to develop a little bit in this class. That is, Arjuna's problem, as we said, was an emotional problem. Arjuna received this pep talk, which was an emotional solution. It failed because in life there are some emotional problems for which there are no emotional solutions. The problem is too big. Generally, for an emotional problem, you require an emotional solution. If you're feeling sad, you require someone to give you a hug or whatever. But sometimes the sadness is unfathomable. And just to be very concrete and specific about it, after you've lost someone very close to you, someone who's died, you feel such sadness and grief at that time. It's clearly an emotional problem. So let's try to apply an emotional solution. Your best friend gives you a hug. Does that remove the pain and grief? All of your families come around. They're also hugging you at the same time. Everyone is hugging you simultaneously. You continue to feel all that grief and sadness. Suppose hundreds of relatives and friends gather around you simultaneously, and somehow they are all simultaneously hugging you and speaking words of encouragement. The maximum amount of encouragement and emotional support you could possibly receive in that situation, does it remove the pain and grief and sadness? Of course not. There are some kinds of emotional problems that are so deep, so intense, that no amount of emotional support will make that emotional pain go away, which is why Arjuna requires a spiritual solution to this problem. Now, this kind of goes contrary to our discussion in last week's class. We said that for an intellectual problem, you require an intellectual solution. For a financial problem, it's a no-brainer. For a financial problem, you require a financial solution. For an emotional problem, you require an emotional solution. For a spiritual problem, you require a spiritual solution. We went through that. Arjuna's problem is clearly an emotional problem. And Sri Krishna started off with an emotional solution, that very bold pep talk. But here we see the fact of the situation, and that is there are some emotional problems in life so severe that an emotional solution will not be sufficient, in which case Arjuna requires not merely an emotional solution. Arjuna requires, in this unique situation, he requires a spiritual solution, which will begin in verse 11. So we'll come to that, maybe not in this class, but we're coming up to that very shortly. All right. So we have seen in verse 4 that Sri Krishna's pep talk has not helped. Arjuna says, I would rather offer flowers unto their feet rather than shoot arrows at my beloved Bhishma and Drona. Now, with the next verse, we have a change of meter. Let me just explain this for a moment. Most of the verses of the Mahabharata are written in a meter called Anushtubh Chandas. I won't bore you with the grammatical details, but we could observe that it has 8 syllables per quarter. Here, Katam Bhishma Maham Sankhye. That's a quarter, 8 syllables. Dronam Cha Madhusudana. 8 syllables. So one of the characteristics of this meter, called Anushtubh Chandas, is it has 8 syllables per quarter. But starting with the next verse, we have a different meter called Trishtub Chandas. Trishtub Chandas has 11 syllables per quarter. Gurun Ahatva Hi Mahanubhavan. 11. And if we were to count, we would find 11 syllables per quarter. Now, the more important issue, though, is why did the text shift from Anushtub to Trishtub Chandas? It's not done arbitrarily. It's done in several places in the Bhagavad Gita. We'll find it in several places, and it's always done for emphasis. Those of you who might get together now and then to chant the whole of the Bhagavad Gita, when you get to these sections in Trishtub Chandas and you're chanting, it really catches your attention. It's very dramatic. They have this shift of meter. It calls your attention to very important verses. And you can't say any verse is unimportant. The entire Bhagavad Gita is important. But there's something uniquely important about these verses that are coming. And I would say especially of verse 7, which is coming. All of these verses are important, but when verse 7 is arguably one of the most important verses in the entire Bhagavad Gita. But let's just begin here with verse 5, where the meter shifts.
Guru nahatva hi mahanubhavan, guru nahatva hi mahanubha, shreyo bhuktum bhaikshamapi haloke, shreyo bhuktum bhaikshamapi haloke, hatvarta kamans tu guru nihaiva, hatvarta kamans tu guru nihaiva. Bhunjiya bhogan rudhira pradigdhan, bhunjiya bhogan rudhira
pradigdhan. It's also very beautiful poetry. When you have more syllables to work with in each line, it allows for more poetry to be expressed. To speak in eight-syllable quarters is almost like not baby talk, but it forces a poet to be fairly simple. When you look at Sanskrit literature, the higher forms of poetry are always expressed in the longer poetic meters. The very simple poetry is expressed in eight syllables. In fact, most of what we call these subhashita, these nice sayings, the good sayings, subhashita, are almost always in eight syllable quarters, anushtubh chandas, because they're simple. So the more syllables you have to work with, the more complex and more profound the poetry can be. So we'll see here some very exquisite poetry. Arjuna continues to, I can't say complain. Arjuna is not the complaining type, but Arjuna here is, what is a good American expression? He is unburdening his heart of his extraordinary pain at being in this situation. So he says, Guruna hatva hi mahanubhavan shreya bhoktum bhaikshamapi haloke. He says, ahatva, having not killed gurun, our teachers, who are mahanubhavan, who are great men, great experienced leaders. So he says, ahatva, not killing them, or rather than killing these great people. Arjuna says, shreyas, it would be better, bhoktum, to enjoy, bhaikshyam. Bhaikshyam means alms. That which comes by begging, bhiksha. That which comes by begging, bhiksha, is bhaiksham, alms. It would be better to bhoktum bhaiksham. It would be better to live upon alms, loke, here in the world. Now, what is Arjuna saying here? He says, instead of killing our great gurus and great leaders of our family, Arjuna says, shreyas, it is best, bhoktum bhaiksham, it is best to live upon alms. There's a hidden meaning here. The hidden meaning is Arjuna is in this untenable situation. Arjuna is in the back of his mind still looking for an escape, some way to get away from the battlefield, some way to get out of this horrible situation so he doesn't have to fight against his own family members. You all have heard stories in India of somebody in a terrible situation, somebody who's just gotten fired from his job, he's got terrible problems at home, fighting with the wife and in-laws, all of his problems, financial problems, debt. Everything is going wrong in this person's life. And then you've heard these stories. One day, he doesn't show up. No one knows what happened to him. Several days pass. No one has heard from him. Weeks pass. No one has heard from him. Several months later, a family member discovers him in an ashram in Rishikesh wearing this cloth. Which is to say, he ran away from his problems. He took sannyasa the rites of renunciation as a way of escaping his problem. Now, the connection between rites of renunciation, life of sannyasa, and this verse is very clear. Who is it that lives on bhikshyam, alms? The one who lives on alms is a sannyasi. So when Arjuna says, Shreyo bhoktum bhikshyam, it would be better to live upon alms, the underlying meaning is it might be better to leave this battlefield and become a sannyasi. He doesn't say it in so many words, but that is the suggestion Arjuna makes. Now, before we go on, let's pause here and take a moment to consider this. We all know that to become a sannyasi, to dedicate your life to spiritual wisdom, prayer, and meditation, no one will doubt that that's perhaps the most noble of lifestyles, to give up all other enjoyments, to give up all other activities, devote yourself exclusively to this spiritual life. Many would feel that this is indeed one of life's most noble, if not the most noble, pursuit of life. Yet, to run away from one's problems is certainly not noble. When that fellow ran away from his home, ran away from his family, ran away from his debtors, ran away from his problems, went to Rishikesh and took sannyasa, there's nothing noble about that. That is mere escapism, and that is highly criticized in the tradition. Be very clear that sannyasa has to be given by one's guru. No legitimate guru is going to give sannyasa to someone who's running away. My own guru, Pujya Swami Dayananda, if he's going to give initiation at all, there are several criteria. One is you should be a student for a dozen years or more. Another criteria is he'll ask you right out, is anyone dependent on you? Anyone. Doesn't mean just wife or family. It means, are parents dependent on you? Is anyone dependent on you? If you're taking sannyasa means you're not fulfilling any of your life's responsibilities, then sannyasa would not be given. Initiation would not be given by Pujya Swami Dayananda. And I believe most gurus would behave similarly, because you cannot begin a life of spiritual pursuit with an act of adharma, to run away from one's responsibilities, most certainly is an act of adharma. How can you begin a life of spiritual pursuit, full-time engaged spiritual pursuit? How can you begin such a life when your first step is in the wrong direction? You get the idea? So, there it happens, as the story I related. It's a fictitious story, but it occurs often enough where somebody disappears and ends up taking sannyasa. This apparently is in the back of Arjuna's mind. Maybe he can leave the battlefield in Kurukshetra. Himalayas are not that far away. He can go up, find some nice cave, and just live, and bhiksham bhiksha, he can live a life of by begging alms. He can take care of himself in that way, thereby leaving all of this terrible suffering and trouble and difficulty behind. But as we just discussed, to run away from your responsibilities is never dharmic, never. So Arjuna, even though he contemplates it, it is clearly not going to be a solution. We'll see. Shri Krishna is not going to say, okay, Arjuna, go off to the Himalayas, go up to Rishikesh, Haridwar, someplace, Uttarakashi, have a nice time. So Shri Krishna is never going to give that advice. So Arjuna proposes, however, this says, Shreyas bhoktum bhiksha. It might be better to live upon alms rather than killing these great men, our teachers. And then he continues, Hatva, because having killed Artakaman Gurun, having killed these gurus, Iha, here on the battlefield, Eva, indeed, having killed these gurus, Artakaman, for the sake of fulfilling our desires, for the sake of gaining wealth, having killed our great gurus, this is beautiful poetry, very, very beautiful in its own very stark way. He says, if we kill our own gurus for the sake of wealth, bhunjiya, I would enjoy bhogan, those enjoyments, I would enjoy those enjoyments, rudhira pradigdhan, pradigdhan, stained, tainted, with what? Rudhira, kun, blood. I would, if Arjuna is saying it, to paraphrase, if we conquer them, we'll enjoy the kingdom, but everything we enjoy will be stained with their blood, with the blood of our beloved teachers and relatives whom we love so much. That expression, stained with blood, is extremely poignant right here. Arjuna continues, pouring out his heart to Sri Krishna. Na chaitad vidma katarano gariho. Na chaitad vidma katarano gariho. Yad vajayema yadivano jayeyuhu. Yad vajayema yadivano jaye. Yane vahatva na jijivi shamas. Yane vahatva na jijivi. Te vastita pramukhe dhartarashtraha. Te vastita pramukhe dhartara. Nacha etad vidmaha. Na vidmaha. We don't know. We don't know etat, this. What is it that we don't know? Kataran, which? Which naha for us? Kariyaha, which is better for us? We do not know which will be better for us. Yatva jayema, whether we should conquer, yatva, or should we conquer, jayema, should we conquer them, yariva, or naha jayeyuhu, or should they conquer us? We don't know which is best. If we should conquer them, Pandavas should conquer the Kauravas, or if the Kauravas should conquer the Pandavas, how could Arjuna even suggest such a thing? Well, based on all of his emotional turmoil and conflict that we've seen in chapter 1 and we see continuing in chapter 2, he's starting to think like that. He knows, Arjuna knows, that he's going to have to fight against Bhishma and Drona. In fact, as the story unfolds, as most of you know, Bhishma and Drona are finally killed by Arjuna himself. And Arjuna is anticipating that at one point on the battlefield, he's going to stand in front of Bhishma and Drona and have to kill them, the ones that he loves more than anyone in the world. And Arjuna is thinking, God, I don't know that I could, how can I kill them? Better that they should kill me. This is what's in Arjuna's mind. So that's why he says in this verse, we don't know what is best, whether it's best that we should conquer them or whether it's best that they should conquer us, because yan eva hatwa, having killed them, having killed who? Te avastitaha, those who are assembled here, pramukhe, right in front of us, those who? Dhritarashtraha, the sons of Dhritarashtra, in fact, the whole Kaurava army, says, hatwa, having killed them, the sons of Dhritarashtra, who are standing here in front of us, having killed them, na jijivishamaha, we would not want to live. Na jijivishamaha. That's how Arjuna feels. How could he live with himself? having killed his beloved family members. Look at the intensity of Arjuna's dilemma, the intensity of his emotional conflict. We've already acknowledged that for some emotional problems, no emotional solution will be sufficient. It'll take a very powerful spiritual solution to such an intense emotional problem. Here's a message for us all. Arjuna's problem is not an ordinary problem. It's an extraordinary problem. His dilemma, his conflict is absolutely extraordinary. So for this extraordinary problem, it's going to require an extraordinary solution, which is what the bulk of the Bhagavad Gita is, an extraordinary solution to Arjuna's extraordinary problem. And for us, what it means is, have you ever had a problem of the magnitude that Arjuna has? You've had big problems, there's no doubt. Have you ever had to face killing one of your relatives? Do you think it's likely to happen? You may have some family conflicts, I don't doubt that. But I doubt you would grab a gun or your relative would grab a gun to resolve the conflicts. So, which means Arjuna's problem is perhaps an order of, pardon me for the scientific language, Arjuna's problem is at least an order of magnitude bigger than our problems. Fair statement? Arjuna's problem is an order of magnitude. Order of magnitude means of 10 times more. 10 times more than any problems we're likely to face. So if the solution given by Sri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita is adequate for Arjuna's problem, how do you think it'll work for our problems? That's pretty good news, don't you think? So, this is what we see. By the way, this is the reason for including this material in chapter 1 and the first part of chapter 2. The reason it's incorporated into the Bhagavad Gita is clearly to show the magnitude of Arjuna's problem. Because only understanding the magnitude of Arjuna's problem does the importance of the solution given by Sri Krishna, the importance becomes clear. Only seeing the magnitude of Arjuna's problem. Okay, now we come to what could easily be considered one of the top 5 or 10 most important verses in the entire text. And verse 7 would, if you compiled a list of most important verses, this verse 7 would most certainly be included among that list. Excuse me.
Karpanya-doshopahata-svabhavaha Prachami tvam dharma sammudha cheta Prachami tvam dharma sammudha cheta Yachreyasyanishchitam bruhitan Shishyasteham shadhi mam tvam prapannam. Shishyasteham shadhi mam tvam prapannam.
To introduce this very important verse, the previous verse we saw Arjuna is confused. He said, Navidmaha, we don't know. Katranaha gariyaha, what would be better for us? Would it be better if we defeat them, or would it be better if they defeat us? You know, for a warrior on a battlefield, that's a pretty, pardon me for saying, it's a pretty stupid thing to say. Can you imagine one of our soldiers in Afghanistan? Gee, Sergeant, would it be better for us to kill these Taliban, or would it be better to let the Taliban kill us? How ridiculous for a soldier to say such a thing. But here, Arjuna has made that statement, and Arjuna, of course, is this brilliant warrior. The fact that he would make that statement shows the extent of his confusion. He has been struggling with his emotions since chapter 1. We've seen that whole emotional struggle. And his struggle is so much he is overwhelmed by his emotions, which has led him to be totally confused. And the extent of his confusion is revealed in the prior verse. I don't know what's best. Should we conquer them or should they conquer us? This is massive confusion. Now, to introduce the next verse, we should point out there are two kinds of confusion. One is worse than the other. One is to be confused and know you're confused. The other is to be confused and to not know you're confused. There's a big difference between the two. Allow me to share with you a story that I've used for many years to describe this. The story is when you're driving with your spouse someplace to go to a party or someplace you've never been before, and you get lost. He's driving, she's in the passenger seat, and there's no GPS in the car. That's an important part of the story. So you're driving and you get lost. And she says, you know, I think this is not the right way. Why don't we pull over and get some directions? And he says, no, I know exactly where we're going. He drives on another 10, 15 minutes, getting more and more lost. She says, dear, why don't we pull over here? And we'll get some information. He says, no, don't tell me what to do. I know exactly where we're going. Now, this is a very typical scenario. They're both lost. Husband and wife are both lost. Both are confused. She's confused about where they are. She's lost, and she readily admits they're lost, and therefore they should stop and get directions. He's equally lost, but he's got another problem. You know, either he doesn't know he's lost, or in this case, he's got too much pride to admit he's lost. But in either event, it's the worse problem. If you're confused and you admit you're confused, at least you will seek out guidance. If you're confused and you don't know you're confused, or you can't admit you're confused due to pride, then you won't seek out guidance, and you will just go further and further off track if you're driving or in life. If we're confused about things in life, and if we have this false pride and say, no, I can figure this out, I will get it right, and I don't need anyone's help, sometimes this kind of false pride can lead to terrible problems. If we're confused, if we're in trouble, if we need help, then pride should not come in the way of our getting that help and assistance and guidance that we need and deserve. So now, to introduce this verse, the question is, what kind of confusion does Arjuna suffer from? He says, Navidmaha, we don't know which is best for us. So is Arjuna's confusion the kind of confusion where he admits he's confused, or is Arjuna's confusion the kind where he doesn't admit he's confused and he wants to tough it out on his own, so to speak? Fortunately, Arjuna is more, going back to the car example, Arjuna is not like him, Arjuna is more like her. Arjuna readily admits he's confused. That's what the first part of this verse says. Arjuna says, Karpanya dosha upahata swabhavaha. He's describing himself. He says, my swabhava, my nature, is upahata, is overcome by the dosha, by the defect or weakness of karpanya, this kind of pity. This kind of pitiful feeling, this extreme sadness he feels in anticipation of the death of so many of his family members. He admits that he is upahata, he's overcome by this dosha, by this weakness. He admits it. What an amazing thing Great warriors are often envisioned as having this macho pride. But that macho pride, as we just suggested, can definitely come in the way of getting advice and guidance when we really need it. Arjuna is a mighty warrior, but Arjuna clearly does not have that macho pride. He admits he is overcome by weakness. Dosha upahata. He admits he's overcome by weakness. He says further, dharma samudha chetaha. Arjuna says his chetas, his mind, is samudha, deluded, confused. About what? About dharma. He admits, I'm totally confused about what is dharmic in this particular situation. So there's no false pride here. There's a ready admission of his confusion, of his desperation. And that is the first step to solving a major problem. If we are unable to admit our difficulty, if we are unable to reach out for help or assistance or in guidance, then we won't even get started in getting the solution. Arjuna admits, step one. What is step two? Prachami Twam. We have to ask for guidance. And Arjuna says, Prachami, I ask, Twam, you. I ask you, O Krishna. So if you need help and guidance, you don't just show up at somebody's doorstep. You have to ask. You have to explain what your problems are. You have to ask for that guidance. And that's exactly what Arjuna does. He says, Prachami Twam, I ask you, Krishna, yat shreyah syat, yat which shreyas best syat would be. And I'm breaking the words apart, which is why spelling changes. Syat becomes syan before the next word, naha. So he says, syat, which would be shreyas best. Nishchitam bruhi tan me. Tan, tat, that. Me, unto me. Bruhi, tell me. Tell me that nishchitam, with certainty, with clarity. Be very definite. Tell me what is best for me. And what is his reference to? If he's saying, what is best for me? Is he saying, what should I have for lunch? Should I have this for lunch or should I have that for lunch? That's not what he's asking. Go back to the prior verse. He is asking, what would be best? Is it best if they conquer us or if we conquer them? That's what he's asking. So tell me, nishchitam, with absolute certainty, yat shreyah syat, what would be best for me? And finally, and one of the most beautiful lines, I think, in the Bhagavad Gita, shishya te aham. Aham, I. I am te shishya. I am your student. If we seek advice, we have to be able to hear the advice. And there's a problem that many people have. This has probably happened to you. Somebody has sought your advice. Think of a time, somebody who's in real trouble, they seek out your advice, you begin to tell them, well, you could do this, no, I can't do that. Or you could do that, no, I can't do that either. Or you might consider this, oh, I tried that already. They come to you for advice, but they really don't want to listen to anything you're suggesting. They've already made up their mind about the situation in some way. This is very common. Unfortunately, it happens quite a bit. So if Arjuna is coming to Sri Krishna, if Arjuna admits, I'm totally confused about what to do, please tell me what to do. But suppose Arjuna has his mind made up already. Suppose Arjuna has already decided, please tell me what to do, but whatever you say, I'm going to run away to Rishikesh. Could be, but it's not. Arjuna, in all humility, says, Shishyah te aham, I am your student. The attitude of a student, Shishya means student. The attitude of a student is a very important attitude. We're all students. So the attitude of a student can be very simply described as this. The guru knows something of value that has transformed his life tremendously, has been such a tremendous blessing. Whatever the guru knows, I want to know that. The guru has some wisdom or perspective of incredible value. I want to gain that vision, that wisdom. Metaphorically, I want to stand in my guru's, can't say stand in his shoes, stand in my guru's chappals. So that I can see through the guru's eyes and think the way my guru does. This is the attitude of a shishya. This is the attitude of a student. It's the attitude of every student. I remember when I first met my guru having exactly that feeling. I saw in Pooja Swami Dayananda someone who had such tremendous wisdom, a wisdom that gave him a clarity about life which transformed everything. And I wanted that clarity, I wanted that vision, that wisdom. And it was natural for me to become his student. So here, Arjuna says, with all humility, he says, Shishyah te aham, I am your student. Shadhi mam, teach me. That's it. Shadhi mam, direct me, guide me. Tvam prapannam, guide tvam, me who am prapannam, bowed down before you. Prapannam means bowed down. I am bowed down before you in all humility. The expression of Arjuna's humility in his verses is absolutely remarkable. This mightiest of warriors, we made that comment before, on the battlefield, Arjuna was the mightiest of warriors. And this mighty warrior humbles himself completely before Sri Krishna, literally bows down and requests guidance. Many of you have seen these pictures, artworks, describing the scene that's called Gita-upadesha. Gita-upadesha, the teaching of the Gita. It's portrayed in many works of art where Sri Krishna and Arjuna are shown in a chariot, their horses in front. Sri Krishna is holding the reins, and the artwork varies quite a bit from one artwork to the other, but often Sri Krishna will be in this, it's called Vitarka Mudra. It's a mudra of teaching, Vitarka Mudra. So he's giving instruction to Arjuna. Arjuna, listen to this, listen to that. And then there are several versions of this, and some versions Arjuna is in the seat of the chariot. He's looking very depressed. But there's other versions of that Gita-upadesha where Arjuna is outside the chariot, down on the ground, begging for Sri Krishna's guidance. And that really is what's conveyed in this particular verse. Not the depression. The depression is what you saw in chapter 1. But here, what we're seeing is that request in all humility, Shadhi mam, teach me, Tvam prapannam, teach me, the one who is prapannam, bowed down, Tvam, before you, teach me. So it's very, very beautiful verse. Arjuna continues.
Nahi prapashyami mamapanudyad. Nahi prapashyami mamapanud yat chokamuchoshanam indriyanam yat chokamuchoshanam indrihan avapya bhumavasapatnam ruddham avapya bhumavasapatnaridhyam rajam suranam apichadipatyam rajam suranam hadich.
So Arjuna continues, Nahi prapashyami, he indeed, na prapashyami, I do not see Upanudyat, what could remove, mama, for me, I do not see what could remove, yat shokam. Breaking the words apart, shokam is a word there. Yat shokam. I do not see what could remove shokam. Yat shokam. That sorrow, that sadness, that pain, that grief. What kind of grief? A grief which uchoshanam, a grief which uchoshanam, which dries up, which withers, indriyanam, my senses. This is his poetic way of describing here. I do not know what could remove my grief, mama shokam. What kind of grief? A grief which uchoshanam, indriyanam, which dries up my senses. It's a poetic expression. I suppose it means something like, which makes me feel dead inside. To dry up senses means what? I think what he's saying is, I feel dead inside. That's one of the symptoms of depression. When you feel absolutely dead and empty inside. Arjuna says, this sorrow which dries up my senses, I don't know what could remove that sorrow. I don't know what could remove that depression. Avapya, even gaining bhumau, even gaining this land, this kingdom, even if I were to gain this kingdom, asapatna riddham, this kingdom which has riddham, which has wealth, which is asapatna, unrivaled. No kingdom is as wealthy as this kingdom. And he says, even if I win this kingdom, this land, this bhumi, even if I gain this land back through being successful in war, Arjuna admits, that would not relieve me of my sorrow and grief. He continues, said, even if I were to avapya, even if I were to gain rajyam, even if I were to be the king of this kingdom with unparalleled wealth, even that would not remove my pain and grief. And even, he takes it a step further, even if avapya, even if I were to gain suranam api cha adhipatyam, adhipatyam, being the master or head or king, suranam, of the gods, even if I were to become king of the gods, even if I were to kick Indra out of the throne and go and assume that position as Lord of the gods, Arjuna says, even then, I don't think anything could remove this terrible grief, sadness, deadness, and emptiness in my heart. And with these words, Arjuna, down on his knees, begging Sri Krishna's guidance. And at this point, Arjuna, actually, he's not quite done speaking yet. We'll see. In fact, what he's going to say is a little bit surprising. But at this point, the scene shifts. Where are we now? Back to the palace. Sanjayo vacha, Sanjayo. Evam huktva hrishikesham, evam huktva hrishikesham, gurakesha parantapa, gurakesha param, nayotyahati govindam, nayotyahati govindam, uktva tushnim babhuvaha, uktva tushnim. So Sanjaya is narrating all of this to the blind king Dhritarashtra. Sanjay Uvacha, he said to the blind king Dhritarashtra, he says, evam uktva, having spoken thus, evam thus, uktva, having spoken thus, who's speaking here? Gudakesha, Arjuna, one of his many names. So Arjuna, having spoken thus to whom? Hrishikesha, to Krishna. So Arjuna, having spoken thus to Sri Krishna, Parantapa is a term of address. Parantapa, the usual translation, scorcher of foes. It's a good translation. Oh, scorcher of foes. Who is Sanjaya addressing here? Dhritarashtra. By the way, to call a blind king scorcher of foes. What do you think is going on here? Flattery. Dhritarashtra is no mighty warrior. He's blind. So when Sanjaya uses this kind of language, he's flattering to Dhritarashtra, maybe trying to cheer up the king. All right. So, evam uktva hrishikesham gudakesha. So Arjuna, having spoken thus to Sri Krishna, then Arjuna's final statement, na yotsya iti govindam. Na yotsya iti, not much. I will not fight. Huh? Wait a minute. In the last verse, Arjuna was down on his knees, begging Sri Krishna for advice. Shishyastehyam, I am your student. Shadhimam, teach me. Twam prapannam, I surrender to you. And then the very next verse, he says, na yotsya, I won't fight. It's as though, to paraphrase this section, it's as though Arjuna says, please tell me what to do, but I won't fight. Wow. Again, it's evidence of Arjuna's conflict. Arjuna can't imagine entering into war as a possibility. He can't imagine that it's a possible solution to his dilemma. Of course, it ends up to be the right thing to do, and Arjuna will understand it. But at this point, Arjuna is sincere. When Arjuna says, Shadhimam, when Arjuna says, teach me, Arjuna is sincere. He's not being insincere. Not like your friend who tells you, who says, tell me what to do, and she's already made up her mind. Arjuna is not like that person. Arjuna is, however, in tremendous conflict. Arjuna sincerely asks Sri Krishna for guidance, Shadhimam, but at the same time, Arjuna is still incredibly conflicted, and he can't imagine fighting against his beloved Bhishma and Drona. Therefore, he says, na yotsya, I will not fight. Govindam uktva, and having said this to Sri Krishna, Govindam uktva, having said this, what happened to Arjuna? Tushnim babhuvaha. Arjuna fell silent. Tushnim. So this is the end of Arjuna's statement here. And you can just see the incredible conflict and inner turmoil Arjuna is suffering here. Sanjaya continues to speak. Tamuvha chakrashi ke shaha. Tamuvha chakrashi ke. Prahasanniva Bharata, Prahasanniva Bharata, Senayor Hubhayor Madhye, Vishidantam Hidam Vachaha, Vishidantam Hidam Vachaha. Tamuvacha Hrishikeshaha, Hrishikesha, Sri Krishna, Uvacha said to Tam, to him, to Arjuna. So Sri Krishna then spoke to Arjuna. This is Sanjaya narrating all of this to Dhritarashtra. So Sri Krishna then spoke to Arjuna. Senayoho ubhayoho madhye. Right there in between. Senayoho ubhayoho. In between the two armies. So being there in between the two armies. Hrishikeshaha, Sri Krishna, uvacha said, Tam to Arjuna said what? Idam vachaha, this statement, which will start with verse 11, which we'll see in our next class. So Sri Krishna said this to Vishidantam. Perfect choice of words. Vishida, the one who's sunk down, we would say to the one who's depressed. So Sri Krishna then said this, what will begin with verse 11, said this to Arjuna, the depressed one, and I'm skipping over the part that's most interesting in this verse. I'll just hint at it right now, but I want to come back to this in the beginning of the next verse, next class. So Sri Krishna says this to Arjuna, prahasan eva bharata. O Bharata, O king, he says this to Arjuna, prahasan eva, as though laughing. Shri Krishna is laughing at Arjuna? Arjuna is done begging, is down on his knees begging for advice. And, you know, Shri Krishna has already blasted Arjuna, don't be a wimp. But remember the harsh language, I won't repeat it today. So he's already blasted Arjuna with his terribly harsh language. Come on, Arjuna, don't be a wimp, get up and fight. And now Shri Krishna appears to be laughing at Arjuna. We're going to come back to this in the next class, but I'll just answer it very briefly here. He's not laughing. Shri Krishna knows something that Arjuna doesn't. Shri Krishna knows something that allows Shri Krishna to feel everything is okay. Arjuna doesn't feel everything is okay. Arjuna feels everything is in a hellish situation. But in Shri Krishna's drishti, in his vision, in his understanding, Shri Krishna knows everything is okay. Everything is as it must be. Everything is as it should be. Therefore, there's no problem. In Shri Krishna's mind, there's no problem. Which is why this verse says, prahasan eva, as though laughing. I want to talk a little bit more about what is that vision that allows Shri Krishna to say everything is okay. And then with verse 11, with the very next verse, the spiritual teaching of Shri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita begins. So we will see all that in the next class. A couple of important announcements. Tomorrow, Sunday, we'll have our children's classes at 11 o'clock, and we'll have I'll hold a question-answer session at 6 p.m. If you have questions, please come join us 6 p.m. tomorrow. Let me mention that our Vedanta class on Tuesday, we're starting a new text this Tuesday. We've already finished the Isha Upanishad. If you'd like to join the class, you can start this coming Tuesday. We're going to start our study of the Kaivalya Upanishad. It's a very purely Vedantic Upanishad. It'll be a very rewarding study. So if you'd like, we'll begin with the very beginning of Kaivalya Upanishad on Tuesday. This coming Thursday, for our Sanskrit students, we will not meet on Thursday. It happens to be Thanksgiving Day, so we will not meet on Thanksgiving Day. But the weekend classes will continue as usual. The Saturday classes and the Sunday classes will have a normal schedule for next weekend. Very good. And we'll conclude with our prayers and Arati.